Hello and welcome to Databook. I am Jack Murtha.
And I am Tom Castles. Databook is an inside digital health podcast. If you're a fan, we'd love to hear from you. Be sure to rate, subscribe, and review.
And, of course, check us out on social media, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and on our website. That is idigitalhealth.com.
Now, for those of you keeping count at home, this is the 12th and final episode of Databook's third season. My, how time does fly, Jack.
It flies.
It began way back in January with a deep look at how big tech was targeting healthcare. Turns out that was our most listened to episode. We also prepped you for HIMSS and debriefed you afterwards.
We looked at the evolving FDA, a whole lot of physician burnout, some change management, and this is also a season of change for us. We did our first ever crossover episode, you know, the one with Don Lee and the HC Biz show, and we did our first two-part episode, which also happened to be entirely narrative.
Yes, we love a good story, so thank you all for sticking with us through it all. And make no mistake, we will be back in about a month. But things might look, or I guess sound, a little bit different when we return. And that is because we're always looking for new stories and new ways to tell those stories.
So here is the deal. We think we have a better way to do this podcast. And we're actually kind of certain that you will like this new way more. And we think you already do, just going by our analytics. So this new way, it's more narrative, and it's really just kind of one cohesive story that still gets at the insights you need to improve healthcare in your own way. And when Databook comes back for season four, we are going all in on the next step of our journey.
We're also going to welcome some excellent guests. Right now, I'm in conversations to speak with Mona Siddiqui from HHS, Sachin Jain from CareMore Health System, and even Eric Topol. Yes, the Eric Topol. Do I need to say any more?
Not really. The point is, Databook is changing. It is growing. But there's one thing about Databook that will never change. And it's sort of the guiding principle of this podcast. Really the guiding principle of our whole website, our whole jobs, our freaking careers.
We will always strive to deliver the best storytelling, hands down, in health IT. On top of that, we will always do our best to cut through the hype of health IT and bring you information that you can actually use. So that's like our 1-2 punch, great stories and insights that cut through the noise.
But there is one problem, and it's a problem that doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon. Health tech is absolutely drowning in hype.
Okay, before we get going today, I need to note that this is not your typical Databook episode. It's a good one, of course, but it's different. Here's how it's going to go down.
Maybe this is a little ironic because we just told you about how great our storytelling is, but this episode, there's no narrative, and there's not even a special guest. Today, you just get us, me and my friend Tom, your hosts, in conversation. And we are going to be talking about the very problem that we are kind of dedicating our lives to solving, busting the health IT hype in favor of better patient outcomes and greater healthcare value.
So we are going to discuss some studies, some expert commentaries, and some use cases, you know, plus our own observations. We're doing all of this to move the ball forward, to take an honest look at the very exciting and very messy space in which we all live and work, and hopefully to help you navigate that madness just a little bit better.
If you don't know Zeke Emanuel, this might be your first episode of Databook. Zeke, his full first name is Ezekiel, is a doctor, an oncologist who got really, really into bioethics. And he spent a bunch of time bouncing around top academic medical centers and government agencies. And eventually, he settled into the University of Pennsylvania, where he spends a lot of time taking very smart, sober looks at medical ethics and health policy.
Now, about a month ago, Zeke teamed up with Robert Wachter, another super respected doctor who actually created the hospitalist specialty. So these two very smart, very innovative MDs got together and wrote a commentary for JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association. And in this piece, they asked a pretty fundamental but incredibly challenging question.
When it comes to AI, artificial intelligence, in healthcare, will the value match the hype?
Yeah, that's a big question.
Exactly the kind of thing that we're talking about on today's episode. So these doctors set the stage like this. AI is perceived as a magic bullet to all of healthcare's unfathomable problems. Care quality, costs, access, and you name it. So doctors Zeke and Rob acknowledge that AI has already done some pretty amazing things. But will it actually bring about better high-value care?
Now they say, hey, it's one thing to do cool stuff with AI. It is entirely different to turn algorithmic advice into better decision-making.
And from the very top of their field, these doctors argue that the success of AI and data and analytics will all really depend on one big thing: behavior change. Will physicians and other clinicians actually use the high-tech insights to alter their courses, to take actions they wouldn't otherwise in the name of improving patient care? So, Tom, this strikes me because so much of what doesn't get covered is change management. You know, we, in our daily mission of kind of trying to fight the hype in this space, this is like the big part that we rely on. How is it affecting or being adopted by physicians and other clinicians on the ground? And we know a few things about that. One, technology, if it's not done properly, contributes to burnout. Mm-hmm. AI is supposed to be something that makes doctors' lives easier, right? Mm-hmm. But what if it doesn't? What if it ends up being a tool that actually ranks doctors, put them in boxes? We've heard that complaint before, or that fear. Or what if it ends up being useless?
Well, I think so much about this has to do with our expectations, right? Because AI, I think it's almost certain that over time will become an incredibly useful tool in healthcare, as we have seen that it is in other industries. But what exactly do we want it to do, and how do we gear it towards those problems? Because AI, by its very nature, is not going to, and it's not designed to solve a vast array of problems. It needs to be specifically designed for these super tiny, narrow niches. And that means that the insights that we're going to get from it are super tiny and narrow. So we also need additional tools to bring those insights together and deliver them. Mm-hmm. Because as we know on the content side of things, you know, having good content is great, but delivering it to the right people is what really matters. So having good insights is great, but delivering it at the right place at the right time makes all the difference.
When you look what a lot of these algorithms are doing, whether they're ones that are on the market or are in the super early stages of validation, you're seeing results that a lot of these AI models perform better than clinicians at diagnosing things like diabetic retinopathy and all sorts of other mostly imaging-based things. So on the one hand, you have that type of AI that could ultimately, I don't want to say replace, but that can augment a certain specialty, whether it be radiology or ophthalmology, whatever, in a setting where it needs to be augmented, like rural primary care. You know, if all of a sudden you can dole out specialty diagnoses there, that's really huge. So I think, with all due respect to the doctors, I think that's one part that's going to happen, and the hype is going to be there, and the value is going to be there. It's already happening, like IDX, and we're going to see it more and more. On the other hand, this type of more like clinical decision support AI this type that is really meant to do the very tricky work of aiding doctors in more complex decision-making, like, I don't know, oncology, stuff like that. Yeah, I don't know. To me, it doesn't seem like there's any one interface, any program that's just going to be, boom, accepted by doctors the world over.
Well, yeah, I think that's a great point too. And I think that's true of all technology, really. I read somewhere the other day that the technology for unmanned elevators was available in the very early 1900s, but people just didn't want to get into a steel box that was attached to a rope in a giant high rise without the elevator operator in it with them. It had nothing to do with the capabilities of the technology. It had everything to do with the way people felt about it. So it wasn't until, I think, the 1940s or 50s that your standard elevator operator with, you know, the little hat and the button-up shirt kind of went the way of the buffalo. So I think that there's a huge cultural aspect to it, too. How much trust do we place into doctors right now? How much trust do we place into AI? And when will that sort of tipping point occur? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's a great point. Over time, if AI is going to be delivering some sort of value, it will be put into the decision-making process at an enterprise and perhaps healthcare system, national, international-wide level. Like, that's just going to happen over time. It might not happen overnight. It probably should not happen overnight. Right. But at the same time, what you were just saying brings us to a bigger question, kind of, which is, is it hype if the technology is there, but the people aren't there yet? I'd say yeah. I'd say if we are not ready to implement and use something at scale, and we're talking like we are, and we're talking like it's here, then yeah, to some degree, that is hype.
I think you're absolutely right, and I'm trying to think of examples. I know we talked to Nick Vanterhayden in one of our early episodes about, you know, this digital hospital that he was working through in the early 1990s. And it seems to me that the key takeaway there is that we just were not ready to, you know, both logistically and culturally adopt that sort of new approach to things. We were very comfortable with the way things were done, despite the fact that they weren't optimized for better outcomes or what have you. So I think that our willingness to accept this technology is directly correlated with the technology's potential for success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of like, so back in the day, I know my mom was always the early consumer adopter. Like, she wanted a CD burner just because, you know, it was a CD burner. It was something new. If you are running your hospital with that type of mindset, which I don't think many people are, but as this technology becomes more affordable and more pervasive, you know, there could end up being lesser solutions on the market that don't, maybe they're great solutions, but they don't fit what you need, whether it be in your department or in your organization as a whole. If you're kind of coming at it from this, wow, this is cool, let's give it a shot mindset, like my mom with the CD player, right, it's not going to work.
No, I mean, you may get the blessing of a couple early adopters who are just like your mom, but everybody else who's too busy, you know, dealing with the patients on the ground floor to even look up at the latest research probably aren't even going to bat an eyelash at something like that. And then, you know, we know what happens when you try to shove it down people's throats. Doesn't go so well.
It doesn't
like
work.
That U2 album that Steve Jobs put on all of our iTunes playlists.
Yeah, U2. Oh, God. Yeah, I never listened to the album, but I'm sure it was horrendous.
Yeah, I have no faith in that album. Allow me, you know, it's got some of the worst press in the world.
Well, I think the takeaway is that, yeah, you know, behavior change is critical to all of this. And it's something for all of us to keep in mind. Even when we're seeing clinically validated solutions, it's, will your staff use it? Will it help patients?
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that when we talk about the goal being behavior change, I don't want to rule out the possibility that technology can be the vehicle that changes the behavior. About a year ago, IBM Watson Health laid off an undisclosed number of people. This was the healthcare AI arm of the AI company. And that spring, an IEEE story described doctor disappointment with Watson and these brutal launch failures. Late last summer, even more details of Watson's healthcare shortcomings came to light in a Stat News piece. The takeaway was a rough one, and it was basically this. IBM Watson Health was not all it was made out to be.
So in all of that reporting, another secondary theme emerged. It was all about the marketing. Remember Robert Wachter, the doctor who worked with Zeke Emanuel on that commentary? Well, last April, he spoke to a reporter about IBM Watson Health, and here is what he had to say.
They came in with marketing first, product second, and everybody got excited.
Wow. So, Tom, this is obviously something that anybody who is in health IT, healthcare, is familiar with. There are a lot of marketing dollars in this space, and that's not to ravage marketing. We get some of those marketing dollars. Let's be clear. That is what helps keep our publication alive. But not all of the marketing is being used properly. Not all of this marketing is supporting things that are actually happening, that actually exist. Some of this marketing is a wish list, or maybe it's a little bit ahead of the reality on the ground. So when we're talking about things like newer EHR systems, population health management tools, AI, analytics dashboards, whatever, right? Even right down to adherence apps, things like that. We're talking about things that have real potential to incite real change. And maybe they can improve healthcare for the better, for providers, for patients, for the enterprise level.
Right.
But what we're seeing so often is marketing that does not reflect that sober desire that I just had, right? Like optimism, but contained optimism. We're seeing marketing that relies more on buzzwords, you know, smart healthcare, whatever. I mean, we walk around hymns together, you know.
Fixing healthcare, transforming yeah. healthcare, yeah.
And less on what it's actually doing and how it's doing it.
I think it's exciting, right? I mean, you and I both got into this field because I mean, anyone can sniff the potential from 10 miles away. There is a lot of work that needs to be done in healthcare, and we're going to need really intense, powerful tools by our side to be able to accomplish that. The thing is, the question is, what are those intense and powerful tools? How do we choose, with limited space in our tool belt, which tools we stick in there? And if we rely exclusively on marketing to do that, we're probably going to end up with the ones that are really sleek looking and feeling, but aren't going to, you know, last that long. And when we take it back to get our receipts, maybe the store is closed up, right? So I know that's like it's a pretty out there metaphor, but I think that it's one that is pervasive here. I'm excited about this industry. I can't wait to see, you know, every day when I wake up what the latest advancements are. But in order to find those real, true advancements that are making a difference where the rubber hits the road, I feel like I have to sift through emails and tweets and personalities that are specifically designed to bolster that excitement without any of the on-the-ground use.
And I think a big thing for us, you know, we're coming at this as lay people, so we rely on our experts, right? We talk to our ad board, our colleagues, other experts who are outside of our network, and we're bringing them in. It's huge for us. And obviously, that's what health system leaders have to do inside their organizations and out too. Like when a CTO at one organization or a CIO at one org finds a vendor that's doing something good, I mean, maybe you should go to bat for them in privately among your friends. And when you find a bad vendor who is really not living up to what they told you they would do, yeah, come on, share that information. Yeah. You don't want to see your competitors burn, because if they burn, their patients burn. But I don't know, it's the age of M&As, so maybe you do. But I guess the thing is, there's one good part of all this too. These solutions are so damn expensive that nobody is just buying them based on marketing alone.
And thank goodness for that.
Thank goodness. So what it contributes to, though, is a larger feeling of uncertainty pervading the industry. And maybe nobody is buying the bad solutions, but maybe some of the good solutions aren't getting into the right hands. Maybe they're not getting out there as quickly as they should because we have this cloud of crap hanging over us.
Right. I think everyone has their own sort of personal real life junk mail folders on the information that is coming into their lives every day. And just naturally, sometimes the junk, this theoretical junk folder picks up stuff that we may have wanted to hear about. And I think you're right that there are other ways of sifting through the noise. And one of the best ones is to talk to people who have done this work before, talk to the pioneers who have implemented the solutions that you're interested in, and find out more about the strategy that they use to get there.
So that's going to do it for this episode of Databook. If you like this podcast, please, please, please rate, subscribe, and review. Yes, I am begging.
So listen, folks, we want this to be a two-way street. We give you the best insights that we can provide. We would love for you to shoot some back our way. So hit us up on social media. Me and Jack, we have our own Twitter accounts. We're on LinkedIn. Of course, Inside Digital Health is on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook as well. And of course, this is an Inside Digital Health podcast. Come visit our website. Let us know what you think. And if you'd love to be a part of it, we'd love to have you. We'd love to have you reach out and write for us anytime you wish.
We'll come back at you late next month with the first episode of season 4. Until then, I'm Jack Murtha.
And I am Tom Castles.
And this is Databook.